And good morning, everyone. Judge Barrett and I are delighted to welcome Judge Durkin from the Northern District of Illinois, who is sitting with us by designation this morning. Thank you for answering our phone call. All right, with that, we'll begin with our first case this morning, which is Gallo versus Mayo Clinic Health System. Mr. Mora.
Good morning, Justices of the Seventh Circuit. I need a second. My name is Stephen Mora. I represent the plaintiff appellant in this matter. And he's sitting there right in the first row. If it may please the court, Your Honor, my client is the victim of a grave injustice, both by the behavior of the Mayo Clinic and as a result of the wrongful decision of the trial court. In 2010, Dr. Gallo was a young attending physician at Mayo Clinic in the western area of Wisconsin. She was highly regarded, highly reviewed. As you know from reading the briefs, there was an incident that occurred in 2010, an unfair and untruthful incident. But the result of it was that Dr. Gallo decided it was in her best interest to leave the employ of the Mayo Clinic and to move on in her career with employment elsewhere. But she was afraid, as a result of this incident, that Mayo Clinic and personnel at Mayo Clinic going forward might say things about her, about her performance, and say bad things. It wasn't fair and it wasn't right, but she felt that she needed to negotiate a separation agreement with the clinic, and she did so. She hired counsel, and she negotiated a separation agreement, a very fair one, but a very, very broad one. It's set out at page 4 of my reply brief. Even the most cursory view of it, and not necessarily by a lawyer or by a judge, shows the broad scope of this and that the total tenor of it ideology of it was to prevent Mayo Clinic from saying anything about Dr. Gallo's performance at the clinic and certainly saying anything bad about her.
Well, anything to potential employers.
To potential employers, exactly.
So it was a limited agreement.
Well,
what
I would
could
say,
be said to prospective employers?
It was more limited, perhaps, than if she got it from, if they got a question from somebody who couldn't possibly be her employer. But potential is a very broad word. And as it turned out, she was recruited by Mount Sinai Hospital, a large hospital in Manhattan.
Actually, she wasn't recruited by the hospital. She was recruited by a clinic. And
No. The
inquiry from the hospital had to do with the credentialing decision. That's what the crux of this dispute is about.
No, Your Honor. The original recruiting was by Mount Sinai for a position at a smaller hospital named Refua. The direct employer at the end of the day was going to be Refua. Mount Sinai, the doctor who recruited her, Dr. Mark Liebwall, was the head of the Department of Dermatology at Mount Sinai.
For a position at Mount Sinai.
It was not for a position at Mount Sinai, that's correct. It was for a position and employment at Refua, a smaller hospital, a distance away from Manhattan. The reason for that was that Mount Sinai had a contract, an arrangement with Refua to provide Refua with residents from Mount Sinai. But in order for that to work, Mount Sinai, Refua had to have an attending physician who could supervise those residents. And therefore, that doctor had to meet the high standards required by Mount Sinai.
Counsel, was Mount Sinai the only hospital that sent its residents to Refua?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. But I know in this case, Mount Sinai was the one who recruited Dr. Gallo. They thought she was a good fit for this particular position. And when they did recruit her, she talked to Dr. Liebwall about it. She talked to a Dr. Manini at Refua about it. And she concluded that it was a good position for her and she would like the job. There was discussions over a variety of months, a number of months. She decided she wanted the job and therefore she applied for and got her license to practice medicine in New York.
Is Refua a subsidiary of Mount Sinai?
I'm sorry?
Is Refua a subsidiary of Mount Sinai?
It is not. But they had an arrangement with Mount Sinai. To the best of my knowledge, there's no corporate relationship, no subsidiary kind of relationship.
So the employment relationship, the prospective employment relationship, was with Rafua. That's undisputed.
Absolutely right. So she got her license to practice medicine in April of 2014. She immediately told Dr. Manini at Rafua, and she told Dr. Liebwahl at Mount Sinai. But because of the arrangement that existed between Rafua and between Mount Sinai, it was Rafua that needed and did negotiate the employment contract, and immediately upon being told that she had her license, sent her a written employment offer. But because her position was dependent on her being an attending physician, monitoring the activities of residents from Mount Sinai, it was Mount Sinai that did the credentialing. As a result, Mount Sinai did begin the credentialing immediately in April of 2014, and they sent to Mayo Clinic what they called an affiliation verification form.
But Counsel Manini testified, or has this affidavit in any event, saying that the reason she was not hired was not the credentialing decision, but rather the difficulty in the negotiation of the contract.
Yes, there's evidence from Dr. Manini. That's what she says in a declaration. She was never deposed. She made that declaration 2 years after the facts. She claims she was able to focus in on the dates May 6th to May 15th. Interestingly, though, as long as I'm responding to your question, she didn't tell anybody. She didn't tell Dr. Gallo in the midst of their contract negotiations that she'd rescinded the offer. She didn't even tell anybody at Mount Sinai who was doing the credentialing. She didn't tell Dr. Liebwahl,
we decided to
go in another direction.
But what contrary evidence besides the hearsay evidence that was excluded do you have?
Dr. Liebwahl testified at his deposition that he was told by the credentialing committee that Mayo Clinic had filled out the affiliation verification form, which was a complete breach of the separation agreement, and in two of the categories gave a ratings of fair, which is understood is a damning rating. As soon as he was notified of that by the credentialing committee said, Dr. Liebwahl is head of the Department of Dermatology. We want you to please look into this application. He testified in his deposition that he decided not to advance the application. He made that decision. He says that in his testimony. There's no mention of Rafua or Dr. Manini. And as soon as he says that in his own deposition, in the time of the events in 2014, he sent an email to Dr. Gallo on May 15th, just a day or two after he had made the decision that he would not advance her credentials. He said, "Your application was not adequate for credentialing." No mention of Rafua. "Your application was not adequate for credentialing by the Mount Sinai Credentialing Committee, and Rafua is therefore not waiting to offer you the job." He didn't say Rafua has decided not to give you the job. He said because we've decided your credentialing doesn't meet the standards of Mount Sinai, Rafua is not going to wait there to give you the job.
Well, counsel, he's not the decision maker on whether or not to give a job at Rafua, and the decision maker said she didn't take into account, it was even unaware of the bad rating or the fair rating.
Well, he is in part the decision maker because if she didn't meet the credentialing requirements of Mount Sinai, then she could not possibly get the job at Rafua.
It never got that far, though. The person at Rafua said, we don't want to hire her because of difficulties in contract negotiations.
With all due respect, Your Honor, it's not a question of it not getting that far. There is no evidence that anybody other than Mount Sinai knew that this occurred. Dr. Manini didn't tell anybody. This declaration, without a deposition, came 2 years later. She focused in on a period of 8 or 9 days. Dr. Liebwahl, according to Dr. Gallo, who called Dr. Liebwahl immediately after he said, you're not going to get this position because your credentialing isn't good enough, told her that it was all the fault of the affiliation verification form that was sent by Mayo Clinic, and that it was the fair ratings that cost her the position.
Why wasn't her deposition taken?
You'll have to ask prior counsel.
Well, but that's telling.
I wasn't counsel at the time.
The judge, the record I saw, the judge gave plenty of opportunity for that deposition to be taken.
I don't disagree with you. All I'm saying is it was not It was not, she was not deposed. So it was her lonely declaration, and I think her memory might well have dimmed. I'm not saying absolutely positively that her testimony is not worthwhile. What I'm saying is that the combination of Dr. Liebwahl's testimony combined with Dr. Gallo's testimony as to what Dr. Liebwahl told her makes it absolutely clear that the decision not to give her the job was made by Mount Sinai, and they had the right and ability to do that, because if she did not meet their credentialing requirements, that would be the end of it. And just to get back 1 minute to your question, Your Honor, the agreement says nothing about prospective. It says potential employer. Mount Sinai was clearly a potential employer. They were a large hospital with a large department of dermatology.
Mount Sinai wasn't doing the employing here.
I'm sorry?
Mount Sinai was only credentialing. It was not employing your client.
It was potential, yes. They had the
potential. Mount Sinai was not a potential employer. Rafua was the potential employer.
No, Rafua.
Mount Sinai had only the responsibility to make a credentialing decision. So
yes.
It doesn't fit within the terms of the contract if what you're complaining about is the communication from Dr. White from Mayo. I think he was the only one who communicated with Mount Sinai.
Yes.
From Dr. White to Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai was not the prospective or the potential employer.
They were a potential employer.
They were not the potential employer in this context.
But
it was Rafua.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the contract is I disagree with you, it is very broadly drafted. It talks about a potential employer. It could be that Mount Sinai might have sent out this form to 20 different potential people to take this job without having made a decision to specifically hire anybody or any one of them. They still would have been a potential employer. That's what the separation agreement calls for. Yes, Rafua was the prospective employer, but there's nothing in the contract, in the separation agreement, that says anything about a prospective employer. And furthermore, we're talking about half a degree of separation here between Mount Sinai and Rafua. One could certainly look at this as they were the agent of Rafua doing this credentialing to find a attending physician for Rafua.
Doesn't the complaint say that there was a breach of the separation agreement that caused her not to receive the job she applied for? She applied for the job at Rafua, not at Mount Sinai.
Well, I don't think at this point, after 3 years of this case, Your Honor, that we have to limit ourselves to what the complaint says. The contract specifically says potential employer. This was clearly a request for a reference from a potential employer. And you can say that I'm being technical, but that's what the contract says. It's very specific. It doesn't say prospective. If it said prospective, we wouldn't be here. We'd have lost, and we would have correctly lost. But in this case, the contract is being written in the read by the trial court in the most limited possible way. It isn't what it says.
Mr. Mora, your time has expired.
I'm sorry?
Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Modell.
May it please the court, counsel. Mayo Clinic asked this court to affirm the judgment of the district court. The court has got it focused on exactly what I want to talk about, the two issues, the potential employer issue and the causation issue. Potential employer issue, I thought based on the proposed findings of fact process that our district court used that was not an issue in this case any longer. The proposed findings, and I've set forth the three key ones at page 34 of the response brief, were as follows. MSH, which is Mount Sinai, had never offered Dr. Gallo an employment position at any MSH entity and had not promised Dr. Gallo any future position at any MSH entity, plans response admitted. Finding of fact 141, Dr. Liebwahl at no time promised Dr. Gallo employment at MSH, answer admitted. And Finally, the employment relationship was to be between Dr. Gallo and RHC, which is Rafua, and not Dr. Gallo and MSH, and that's also admitted. Also, ask the court if there's any question to look at Dr. Lebwohl's deposition testimony, where he's asked that question also multiple times, and at pages 10, 33, 35, and 67, 68, he makes clear that there was never to be a relationship between Mount Sinai, an employment relationship between Mount Sinai and Dr. Gallo. The two arguments that the plaintiff makes is that potential has this broad meaning that it's going to potentially pick up anyone who's a hospital who Dr. Gallo, being a doctor, could possibly work at. The key is what the court has done is to look at the language of the agreement. And the language of the agreement is a letter of reference will be provided to potential employers seeking a reference. It's very specific as to it being a potential employer. It's not broad as a plaintiff would suggest that it's anybody in the medical world who potentially could employ Dr. Gallo. The other argument that plaintiff made in their brief, in her brief, was that the language of the agreement is broad enough to cover any inquiry that's made by any third party to Mayo about Dr. Gallo. And clearly the language of the agreement that's unambiguous talks about potential employers. So believe that, and just listening to our argument, Judge Sykes, you asked plaintiff's counsel straight out whether or not they agree that the only employer, potential employer, was Rafua, and the answer was yes. So I think that ends all inquiries, because if there's not a potential employer, there cannot be a breach of the agreement. But I do want to just briefly touch on the, I guess before I leave that, there was a statement made that Mount Sinai recruited Dr. Gallo. The evidence is that as a favor, and that was Dr. Lebwohl's exact language in his deposition, he provided a copy of the resume, Dr. Gallo's resume, to Rafua. It was Rafua who was looking for a position. It was not Mount Sinai looking for a position or recruiting Dr. Gallo for a position. On the causation piece, the theory, plaintiff's theory, is there's this affiliation verification credentialing form. It's a very positive form, but has, of 13 categories, it has two fares, and those two fares, in essence, caused Mount Sinai to not credential her, causing Rafua to not hire her. Okay? A lot of dots to connect, none of which get connected. Dr. Manini is the hiring authority at Rafua. She did a declaration because of problems getting her deposition by all parties, did a declaration, and the declaration said the credentialing decisions played no role in her decision not to hire Dr. Gallo. She said there were three reasons: this continuous renegotiation, the making demands at, and that's this May 6th email that Dr. Gallo sent after there was an employment contract agreed to by the parties, asking for 18 changes. And I think Dr. Manini's response to that was telling, because on the same day she writes to her legal counsel and her clinic manager saying, I'm happy to rescind this offer. So Dr. Manini had bases that she set forth in her declaration. Those bases are not disputed with any admissible evidence. And when we look at the documents also support exactly what Dr. Manini said. I mean, she says this continuing negotiation. There is a set of emails that deal with the continuing negotiations. He talks about one reason because Dr. Gallo was making demands that were unacceptable to Rafua, and the email with the 18 demands after the contract was fully negotiated confirms that. also asked the court to have a look at Dr. Lebwohl's deposition, because he is asked many, many times about this decision to have his person, Dr. Kim, be who is available to do this position when Rafua no longer wanted Dr. Gallo. And he walks through that multiple times, that yes, that was the key, that because there was somebody available, and this conduct by Dr. Gallo, that was what the decision was going to be, to have Dr. Kim rather than Dr. Gallo handle that position. The court had in a motion to supplement, said they wanted to save that for oral argument. I don't know if there's anything the court wanted addressed on that. I believe that's probably more for plaintiff than it is for Mayo Clinic.
Apparently not.
Okay, so I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mora, your time had expired, but I will give you a minute to wrap up if you have anything further to say.
I do, and I appreciate your patience. I didn't realize that it had run out.
The clock can be a little confusing.
It's my fault. Your Honor, the whole Dr. Kim thing is a total red herring. Dr. Kim never took an additional position. That's the evidence in the case at Rafua. It's true that under very strong leading questions asked of Dr. Lebwohl at his deposition, that he said, yes, I made the decision. There were, part of it was certainly the fair ratings, but I also had Dr. Kim, who was not making money where she was, and that was a consideration in the decision. But at the very end of his deposition, counsel for Dr. Gallo asked him one simple direct question. Do you remember when Dr. Kim became part of this equation? And he said, I don't really remember that, I'm sorry. And he had a lot of memory lapses in his deposition as well. Lastly, it's interesting that counsel and Dr. Manini talk about the reasons that she decided not to, she claims in her declaration that she decided, even though Dr. Lebwohl said he made the decision. One of the reasons, for example, was that Dr. Gallo had too many changes she wanted in the contract. All she had to do was write her back on May 6th. She had those changes. She never did it. There is not one item of proof in the record that Dr. Manini's memory is correct. She never wrote Dr. Gallo. She never told
Dr.
Lee.
We'll have to counsel wrap up now.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. And our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.